Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
We're doing our monthly check-in with Renee Dobis of Connecticut Housing Partners, which is a nonprofit that's been in Connecticut creating workforce and affordable housing in the state for well over 30 years. And I like to check in with Renee and talk everything housing in the state of Connecticut because she obviously is connected to everybody across the state who's really involved with our housing situation, has great perspective, and has obviously been in the industry for a very long time. And Renee, obviously there's been a lot of focus on this most recent housing bill that was signed into law right before the Thanksgiving break. And it's sort of partisan for obvious reasons, but it's interesting to me because I have not been able to read the context yet of the bill. And I know that you do have the document. What can you say about it now that we've seen the actual language? What do you think about it? And welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, everyone. So basically, my opinion of it is that they just returned what has already taken place. So right now, what was supposed to be happening is every municipality was supposed to put forth a plan to have 10% of their housing stock be affordable. They removed the 10% requirement. Each municipality has to continue to put forth a plan, but there doesn't seem to be any sticks attached to it. They can either do their own plan or they can follow the regional plan. So there'll be regions that will be having a plan as well. If a municipality chooses to do their own plan, it has to follow the same elements of the regional plan. So they have to talk about how they're going to increase affordable housing, what their goals are, and then it has to be approved by OPM. If a municipality puts forth a plan that's approved by OPM, they will have the ability to apply for grants to help build out infrastructure such as sewer and water and things like that to help support the building of additional affordable housing. So, also, the regional... Oh, go ahead.
No. Keep going. You're good.
Okay. So, it's encouraging all the municipalities to put in a priority zone, which would be about 10% of the developable land that they have in their municipalities. And that this priority zone then would grant as a right for someone like me to come in and build in the priority zone. So I wouldn't get any pushback in theory from the municipality. And so they put parameters around that as well, that I could put 10 units per acre. So if I wanted to build a 40-unit development, I would need 4 acres to do that. They also talk about parking. So right now, most municipalities have a formula of, say, 1.5 parking spaces per unit. This outlines and states that for every one-bedroom unit, you have to have one parking space. For every two-bedroom, you have to have two spaces. So what does that mean? If I'm building a 40-unit development and half is, let's say they're all if I'm building 40 units and they're all two bedrooms and it's 1.5 per space right now, that's 60 parking spaces. If it's two bedrooms times the two, now I have to have 80 parking spaces. So they've increased basically what parking requirements are needed. So which means that impacts how much land you need and things like that to be able to build effectively. So, you know, basically to me, I see no improvement. I see no encouragement. It's basically just, okay, put a report together. OPM will have to approve it. Then they're going to put this 17-member commission together to kind of look at everybody's plans. But there is absolutely no language on if a municipality opts out or doesn't do what they're supposed to do or it's not effective, what the consequences are. So how do you have a law with no consequences? I don't understand.
So it's interesting, Renee, because, and I This is where I don't like politics. I tell you, I don't like it. Because, you know, if it sounds like the people who were upset about the first bill that the governor vetoed, they were worried about a lot of the things that you're talking about. And, you know, when I've talked to people like Joe DeLong of CCM, talked to people like you of CHP, you know, you're coming from just a housing perspective, you know, taking the politics out of it. Here's what we're dealing with. And I think it's frustrating because you hear one side that's like, hey, this is what's happening. I mean, to the point that this was in one of my newscasts that I did this week, that there's now a host for Newsmax that's really weighing the option of running as a Republican candidate for governor here in Connecticut, Betsy McCoy. And it's solely because the governor signed this bill into law last week. She's a Greenwich resident. She feels like he's very out of touch. She feels like, you know, and I'm not knocking her at all. But I just, to me, I feel like it is so hard to know what the language actually is going to mean and what it doesn't. And what's interesting is like when I hear you speak, it sounds like nothing really changed. Or if it did, right, it really is insignificant. So I don't know. I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what to do with this law. Honestly, I really don't. I don't.
It is frustrating. I just feel like they kind of, it's definitely pro-municipality. I don't see that any barriers have been removed for affordable housing developers to go into a community. You know, I feel like the same barriers are still there. And there isn't enough push or effort of our state as a whole to really understand that affordable housing is really required in our communities, that, you know, it's going to impact us in an economic way, that our young people coming out of college can't afford to live here, so we'll have a brain drain. I mean, this impacts our lives in so many different ways. And our state legislators, I've said this before, there's no political will and there's no guts to deal with this head on.
You know what bothers me the most, Renee, and you and I have talked about this I don't know how many times, and I know, I think to some extent, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I think if I know you by now, you agree, that I really wish, instead of creating brand new legislation, I wish that we could just look at 830G. I hate to go. I'm sorry. I hate to go back to it. I do. But it's like, can we just address the elephant in the room here, which is that 830G, maybe it worked. Maybe in some regard, it's still working a little bit here and there. But I think overall, everyone's sort of like behind closed doors. Yeah, we should probably fix that. It's just not working. You know, to me, I feel like there it is. That's the crux of the issue. And we're just not going to touch it. I don't get it. Like, yeah, it's a lot of work, but I mean, that's what we should be doing, really.
Yes, I agree. You know, 830G has been on the books for almost 40 years. We know it doesn't work, you know, because if it worked, we wouldn't be in the place we are today, where we're short 125,000 units of affordable housing. So we wouldn't be seeing households paying 50% of their income towards their rent. So it really is. We're really almost in an emergency situation here, and it needs to be treated like an emergency, and it isn't. It's they really buckled under the pressure from the municipalities. That's how I feel.
So I get, I think, kind of, yeah, I think to some degree they really tried to hear from where municipalities were coming from. And I don't know, it's a hard conversation, because part of me feels like, you know, people pay the money to come to Connecticut for space, for example, for, you know, and I do get to some degree, you know, that things change, right? I mean, Connecticut's not the same as it was even 20 years ago. So I get that. I look at the town that I grew up in, which was Fairfield. You know, the beach community was not McMansions everywhere. So I mean, and right, certainly was not developed the way that it has become. You know, so I do get that, you know, the feel of towns and stuff. I get that and needing to change that. But I do think, you know, in some regard, I just keep hearing about development and opportunity to have people move in. And I don't know who we're serving. I don't see where we are actually creating affordable housing for people actual viable options for either seniors who need to downsize and live somewhere where they're not putting, you know, their money all towards their rent or, you know, their mortgage. I don't see where we're attracting healthcare workers, teachers, cops, firefighters, the people we need because they have nowhere to live. So there you go. We're missing out on great opportunities there. I don't see where kids are moving out of their parents' basements after college. So they move to another state just to be on their own because they can't afford anywhere. Right. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I do get that we need to, you know, have a little more, I think, compromise. But I also think whenever we are building in places like Fairfield, I'm not seeing where anyone on average is affording to live in Fairfield unless you're coming from New York City or you come from a bunch of money. Exactly. You know what I mean?
No, it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. And then the other thing is, you know, the municipalities have had to put plans in place already that are updated every 5 years. So now there's a new plan that they have to put in, which probably has different bells and whistles in it compared to the original one, isn't due until like June 1st, 2028. So to me, that's a 2-year moratorium on not having to comply with trying to build affordable housing.
Yeah, I mean, so the big question is obviously going to be, now that this is a law, will it be touched during the legislative session? If not to put words in your mouth, but I would imagine you want it to be looked at.
Yes, I do. And also the practicality of it, right? So just because it's in law doesn't mean that when I go into a municipality that I'm going to be welcomed and that, you know, they're going to want me to build the type of housing that we build in their municipality. You know, there'll be other ways for them to try. If they really don't want it in their community, they will find a way to keep it out of their community, just like it's happening today. So there's no teeth in this thing. And so to me, it's just churning over, you know, old laws into something new, and they're trying to make it like it's something fancy, and it isn't. I don't know what else to say about it.
No, but I appreciate the honesty, and I think I just think the reality behind it. That's just it. It's interesting to me because how do you take a document that was, I don't know, over 80 pages, I'm now losing track, an original document, yeah, and then it becomes over 100 pages. And essentially what you're saying is it didn't do anything, really. So like, what in the world was in 100 plus pages? But then you also have people who, it's the unknown. You have people who feel like, well, the unknown is what was signed into law. But again, like I said, if it was up to me, the elephant in the room is actually to put months of work into fixing 830G. I think that is your starting point. In my professional opinion, that's what I think. But what do I know?
Yeah. Well, and I've spoken to, representatives in Hartford about 830G, and they won't touch it. They will not touch it. It's like it's a political hot iron for them, and they don't want to lift it. And the other thing is with this bill, this was negotiated behind closed doors with no public hearing.
Yep.
And it was negotiated behind closed doors with the council municipalities and the governor. That's so of course it's only going to favor one side.
So it's interesting, Renee, because I appreciate that perspective, because regardless of if you felt like the bill was damaging, so there are some who feel like it's damaging, and then there are some like yourself who feel like it doesn't do anything, really. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't do enough. So regardless of what side you're on with that argument, everybody, it feels like, agrees that the fact that it was done behind closed doors, why was this pushed through a special session with no public hearing, that's a loss for Connecticut.
Yes, I agree. Because this, you know, especially something that impacts the entire state, there should be a public hearing on it. And I find it insane that there wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a lot of people feel that way, whether they thought it was a damaging bill or they felt like it didn't do enough. It sounds like both populations of people is what I'll call it. Feel like that was a real loss for Connecticut, the fact that we did not offer that opportunity for something that impacts so many people. So that's a good point. Renee, I appreciate having our conversations that we do every month. Thank you so much. And we will see come February if they actually keep working on this bill, now law. And we'll keep having conversations with you like the ones we just had. Thank you so much.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.